Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk.
Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Caroline Dizor from, well, the wine region of Yecla, which is down in the southeastern corner of Spain.
Exactly. Hello. Nice to be here, Chris.
But you're not Spanish, are you?
No, I'm Swiss.
Swiss? I thought you said you were French.
Both. My father is French and my mom is Swiss. So, yes, I'm both. And I'm a lover of this region because I think Monastrell, the main variety down there, is really interesting.
Well, it's Monastrell is what we're going to talk about today.
Cool.
Okay, so Monastrell.
Yes.
The Aussies call it Mataro.
Yes.
And the French call it Mourvèdre.
Exactly.
It's the same grape variety.
It is. Absolutely.
Has it got any more names?
No, I don't think. I think this is pretty. Yeah.
Okay, and in France, Mourvèdre is grown in the south of France,
like Côte du Rhône, Châteauneuf du Pape, Gigondas, Vaqueras, and this region there.
And there's one region in France that makes 100% Mourvèdre, and that's Bondol. And they're right on the coast, sort of facing off to the sea, and people talk about being southern facing on a hill.
Exactly.
To try and even in the southern France it struggles to ripen.
And it's special because Bondol is the only appellation down there which makes red wines. The whole other region, Provence, is rosé.
Yes.
So Bondol is the only appellation which make red wines made of Mourvèdre,
or we're going to call it Monastrell.
Monastrell,
that's
yes,
right.
In this case, yes.
What's its original name? Do you know where it came from?
I think it comes from this region, the whole coast region from France, because the grapes don't know the borders, right?
Yeah,
we made
true.
Borders, so they just grow where they. And yeah. I think it comes originally from this region,
probably. Okay, so we're going to be talking about mainly Monastrell with regards to Mercia. Do you want to tell us a wee bit about it? Because I always think of Mourvèdre or Monastrell as being a really big, gutsy, tannic, deep-coloured wine.
It is, actually. It is. It is really deep colour, and it's tannic. But as there is a lot of sun, the phenolic ripeness has been made, and that means the tannins are very ripe.
Yeah.
And with the age, they get smoother, and they even get like a bit sweet. You know, you will find sweetness even in the wines when they get aged.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about a young Mourvèdre without wood and anything, but if it's a bit older, it gets really nice and smooth.
Yeah,
and it's a great pleasure actually.
I went through your, because we're at the London Wine Fair at the moment, and yesterday I tasted a few of the Monastrells from around there. And the thing that surprised me is, yes, they're tannic, but they're not as tannic as, say, a Barolo from Italy. You know, a Barolo from Italy can leave my mouth numb. And if you go to a Barolo tasting, it's just after 20 or 30 Barolos, it's like, oh, please get me out of here sort of thing.
Yeah, well, the Nebbiolo, which is the variety which is made of, or Barolo is made of Nebbiolo, is a bit different. And you have to think where we are. You are much further down south than in Piemont. So this Monastrell gets a lot of sun and you get a lot of ripeness. And that's the reason why the tannins are much smoother than maybe of a Nebbiolo in the northern Italy.
Mm. Talking about the tannins and the colour.
Yes.
Just because it's got grape skins with lots of tannins and lots of colours in them, you don't necessarily need to extract all the tannin and colour.
No, you shouldn't. No, because I think otherwise it gets really this heavy and compote and, you know, the really dark cooked fruit wines. And I don't think the consumer is looking for that. You still have to be in the elegance. So that means you don't gonna over extract your wines.
Okay, it's an interesting way of describing it, because to me, I always think of elegant wines as wines with a reasonable acidic backbone. And so therefore, I would have thought that a wine that hadn't ripened as far is going to show more elegance and less cooked fruits. And then if it's physiologically riper, you'll get more cooked fruits and less acidity.
And
so Yeah, I look at it slightly.
And that's the reason why you shouldn't over macerate your wine. You know, it's during the maceration where you get all these aromas and stuff. And as the grape already is very ripe, it's important not to over-extract your wines because otherwise you get all these heavy and opulent aromas, which are a bit too much sometimes, you know.
Oh, okay. So you're saying that's part of the extraction process, as obviously the flavors have got to be there from the ripeness anyway.
Yes.
Okay, so a lighter extraction. I know that sometimes people do carbonic maceration down there. And for the listeners, if you don't remember what carbonic maceration, it's where, well, semi-carbonic is where you've got normally got a big
fruit. What? A fresh fruit. Well, you get the fresh fruit from.
Yeah. You put your grapes in a tank and the ones at the bottom crush a little bit. A little bit of fermentation, so you get CO2, fills up the tank with CO2. No.
You close the tank, actually.
Oh, you're closing the tank.
Yeah. That's the reason why it's carbonic, and it produces the CO2 inside the closed tank. And therefore, at the end, you get really nice and fresh fruit aromas. But I agree with you, they do it, but not 100%, because otherwise you get this...
This
Beaujolais kind of aromas, which you don't really want to. You really want only a bit of freshness, and they maybe do a 20 or 30% of carbonic maceration.
Yeah, okay. The key thing there is that the grapes can't get access to oxygen, so they go through into an intercellular fermentation,
exactly.
As people explain.
Yeah, exactly.
And that gives you those sort of bubblegummy...
Yeah. And droppy curves. And banana aromas.
Yeah, so... I mean, I don't mind those flavors in a Beaujolais, but you look at a big tannic wine, you go, banana as well. Maybe not quite the right flavor profile. Okay, so you can tame the tannins a little bit through extraction and maybe some semi-carbonic, a little blend of that in there as well. Do you find people are making 100% Monastrell, or do
yes.
you think it's more of a blending grape?
No. You find obviously always the purists who really like to make the monocépage, which means you make just the pure Monastrell or the pure Petit Verdot or whatever. But I think generally for the consumer, it's nice to have an assemblage, to have like a bit of this pepper notes of Syrah, and then the elegance of a bit of Cabernet Sauvignon, and the bone, the structure of the Monastrell. And that makes a nice, pleasant wine, I think.
Would you prefer to drink 100% Monastrell,
yes,
or would you...
Definitely.
Okay.
I'm a purist because I'm interested to get the information from the soil, how the people think, who make the wine, and what they feel about the variety, you know. So, yes, I like monocépage, but I know that if you are with friends around a nice table and you have a nice barbecue, maybe it's easier to drink a pleasant and a smoother wine instead of having a pure Monastrell or a pure Garnacha, who are really... like, you know...
Robust.
Robust and very strong wines, you know.
Okay. So if you were to blend it, not that you would, because that'd be wrong, but if you were to blend it, what are the main blending partners that you grow down
well,
there?
Well, in this region, you will also find Petit Verdot, as you said before, which is very interesting, I think. And you find the common Syrah and Merlot. And they blend normally from out of these...
Wouldn't you think Syrah Merlot would be a little bit too hot for the region? I mean,
yeah,
the region's a little bit hot
in
for
in combination, we are again at the same point as before. If you over-extract your wines, it's too hot. But if you do it well and you don't tie too much, it's okay. So, and a bit of it, you know, it's not, you're not going to blend it 50-50. You're going to put maybe 10% of Merlot in it and 20% of Syrah or something. So you have a nice blend.
Like any Spanish wine region, the a lot of the quality is Crianza, Reserva,
yes.
Grand Reserva. Does that still apply in your region?
No. You also can make a Crianza and you can put it on your bottle, but the regulation doesn't say the same than in Rioja or in the northern parts of Spain. But at the end, yes, Crianza also has to be at least 6 months in the barrels,
yep.
And afterwards another 6 months in the bottle. At the bodega.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you don't have a Reserva or a Grand Reserva in the region?
no, you wouldn't put it on the bottle, maybe. You just make it, yeah. You know, and you write on the back of your label that it has been 12 months or 18 months in the barrel.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
You wouldn't call it Reserva, I think. It's, no. No, it's not very known in this region.
Okay, so, but, and the other one is Joven, where the wine hasn't seen any oak at all.
Joven means...
Joven. Yeah.
Joven means young wines.
Yeah.
And these normally are not been... Have not been in the barrels.
So if you're making a Joven,
yes,
or Joven or juvenile,
cool, Chris,
or whatever, my listeners know my pronunciation is pretty rough.
It's okay.
I
got you.
You go for a very light extraction.
Yeah, you have less extraction than if you make a wine which you're going to keep 10 years, you know, obviously, because you need less structure and you are more on the fruit.
Yep. And how long do these wines age? Because alcohol is a preservative and tannins are a preservative and so is acidity. Your wines weren't, the ones I tried anyway, weren't lacking acidity, most of them, but there weren't exactly rapier acidity in the wines. So what's the aging potential of a...
I would say you can keep it 10 to 12 years
still,
because you say there is not much acidity, but I think we are, if you take the grapes from the higher vineyards, you're at least at 6-7 grams of acidity, which is quite... Pretty good.
Yeah, no, it's not too bad, is
yes.
it? Yeah,
28, right. So you can keep it a bit longer and it still stays a bit fresh, you know.
But does Monastrell develop any sort of savory characters as it ages, or how does it go?
Well, you're still going to find this very dark cherry, you know, and obviously when it gets older, you have this tertiary aroma. And how do you say in English? Tertiary, the third aroma.
Tertiary
aromas like leather or tobacco or all this.
Oh, you do get some tertiary savory notes in there. Yeah?
I would say, yeah.
And the other thing is, in South France, a GSM Grenache Sierra Mourvèdre is a very common blend. The Aussies love it.
Yeah. The Californian do it as well. It's called the Rhone Assemblage, the Rhone blend, right?
But so you're talking about your blends being more Merlot and Cab Sauv. Yeah. And but you did mention Grenache and Sierra. So do you guys do a GSM type of blend, or is it mainly just a...
There is a couple of Grenache as well down there, and they make some blends, but I think the typical Rhone blend, it is not. We use more also Petit Verdot, which is a Bordeaux variety and not a Southern France variety. The typical GSM, they don't do it, no.
Okay. What's your favorite wine from the region?
That is very difficult. It depends every morning when I get up, because I don't drink every day the same wine, which is pleasant, you know.
Yeah.
It the wine is like you. It gets up in the morning and sometimes it's nice and sometimes it's a bit rougher. So I wouldn't say I have a preferred wine. I'm just a lover of Monastrell because I think it's a really interesting variety.
Yeah, okay. The other thing is you showed me a white wine.
Yes, the Verdejo.
Verdejo, yeah.
Verdejo. Yes. That's the variety normally you have in Rueda. It's more north.
Yes, that's right. It did smell and taste like a Rueda type of Verdejo.
Mm-hmm.
I thought anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, it had that. It's not really a spiciness or a herbiness. It's sort of like a herbiness, but not quite.
I think it's more white flowers, like elderly flower and stuff like this. And as it is a very, intensive variety, a very...
aromatic.
Like, aromatic, that's the word. Thank you. Aromatic, Riesling or Sauvignon Blanc. You always find these nice flower aromas as well in it. And I think it's well done because, again, we are at 800 meters and you can do a white wine down there, even if it's hot, because of the altitude of the vineyards. And
I saw that you guys had a grape variety, a Macabeo, which I think of as a Riojan grape variety. Viura is normally what you can call it.
Exactly. It's the same, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And they put also sometimes a bit of Macabeo in the vid. And I think this blend this wine you had before, I think they put a 5% or something of Macabeo in it.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And Macabeo is used for cava sometimes as well, isn't it?
In Penedès, they have a lot of Macabeo.
No sparkling wines from down in
No, no. I'd like to just say that, as I said before, I think it's really worth it to go and get these wines from these regions, because you get nice wines for a reasonable price, and it's worth it to taste it once.
Yeah, and I think if you are going on holiday down to Alicante,
yeah,
go inland, give it a
exactly.
go, try the wines,
yeah.
And if you don't like them, that's great. But if you do
and
like
there
the
are
wines,
also there are even very good restaurants in this region. There is three Michelin-starred restaurants. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, so you can really enjoy yourself.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, Carolyn.
Thank you for being here. It was a pleasure. Thank you, Chris.
Cheers.